Vietnam. So put down your books and pick up a gun. We're gonna have a whole lot of fun. And it's one, a two, a three. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. And it's five, six, seven. Open up the pearly gates. My, ain't no time to wonder why. We're all gonna die. Well, come on, General, let's move fast. Your big chance has come at last. Gotta go out, get those reds. The only good commie is the one that's dead. And you know the peace can only be won when the throne of all the kingdom come. And it's one, two, three. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. And it's five, six, seven. Open up the pearly gates.
Come on, fathers, don't hesitate. Send them off before it's too late. Be the first one on your block to have your boy come home in a box.
And it's one, two, three. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. And it's five, six, seven. Open up the pearly gates. Well, ain't no time to wonder why. We're all gonna die.
Alrighty, woohoo! Double songs tonight. Thursday, October the 10th, 2024. Say a little quick prayer before we wrap it up.
Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven.
All right, hi everybody. You might recognize. Hold on a sec. Let me get some tech. Let me turn the right one down. You might recognize that song. That's a Lord's Prayer. That means Frank the Salt Guy is here on a Thursday. Hello, Frank.
Hello, Tim. Hello, Lynn. Hello, audience.
And you might also recognize we had a different theme song at the beginning that was done by Lynn Ertel. Lynn, what was that all about?
Well, to anyone of my age, they should remember that song from 1967.
Yeah.
It's the I Feel Like I'm Fixin' to Die rag.
Yeah.
By Country Joe and the Fish. And when they performed it live, you know, you hear in the opening, they go, give me an F, give me an I, give me an S, give me an H. But whenever you saw them live, they'd say, give me an F, give me a U, give me a C, give me a K. But for the album,
that's what it spelled. I was a little puzzled there.
Yeah. The album came out in 67, and it definitely reflected the mood of the period. There was a folk song called The Draft Dodger's Rag that went like this. Sarge, I'm only 18. I got a ruptured spleen, and I always carry a purse. I got eyes like a bat. My feet are flat, and my asthma's getting worse. Think of my career, my sweetheart dear, my poor old invalid aunt. Besides, I ain't no fool. I'm a-going to school, and I'm a-working in a defense plant. And we all knew these lyrics. We all knew it. We all heard it. It was our culture in 1967. Because even though we're inclined to think that war was fake, we had a compulsory military draft, conscription, right? So what did that mean exactly? And, you know, when you listen to Country Joe and the Fish in 1967, the mood was very light, very lighthearted. We were still flower children. There was a sense of humor and mockery, mellow, good-natured hippie rebellion. Yeah. The 1965 March on the Pentagon, which thousands of people surrounded the Pentagon, and there were troops there with their bayonets pointed at the crowd, and people stuck flowers in the barrels of their rifles. That was the mood then. When Senator Eugene McCarthy of Wisconsin announced he was going to challenge Lyndon Baines Johnson, the incumbent president, for the Democratic nomination on the issue of the Vietnam War, we all cleaned up. Everybody, you know, cleaned up, cut their hair. The guys put on suits and ties, and the girls put on dresses. And we went door to door, like good little Democrats, campaigning for Senator Eugene McCarthy. Yeah. And we were very careful not to offend people and to look very, very middle class and very respectable. And you know what? We kind of won that fight because in the New Hampshire primary, Lyndon Baines Johnson barely edged out this insurgent senator, Eugene McCarthy, who was calling for a withdrawal from Vietnam at that point in 1967. And I think McCarthy got like 49% of the vote. But that was considered so damaging to an incumbent president that Lyndon Johnson then went on the air and announced he would not be running for re-election. Much as we had with Joe Biden. But in this case, the question then became, well, who was then going to become the Democratic nominee for president? And we were determined. We were determined it was going to be Gene McCarthy. Now, there was another one who everybody had all kinds of hopes built up around because there was such a cult of personality around this guy.
Yeah.
His name was Bobby Kennedy. Robert F. Kennedy Sr., the father of the current RFK. And everyone would beg Bobby, Bobby, when are you going to come out against the war? When are you going to come out against the war? And Bobby would hem and haw. And we'd say, Bobby, are you going to demand we reopen the investigation into the JFK assassination? And Bobby would look real nasty and tell us to shut up. Really, he did that.
Wow.
Yeah, he did that. He didn't want to hear about that. But something happened after that New Hampshire primary where Lyndon Johnson had such a poor showing and then went on television and made a speech to the whole nation that evening saying, I will not run for re-election. Oh, the very courageous Bobby Kennedy suddenly decided that he was going to enter the race as an anti-war candidate. So he basically undercut Gene McCarthy at that point.
By the way, Lynn, what got us going on the Vietnam thing, by the way? What brought you to this topic tonight? Because you didn't really... Did you give a background before you started in?
Well, here's my motivation. First of all, I'm going to explain...
What's the motivation? Yeah.
I'm going to explain the nature of the military draft.
Okay.
In 1967, 68, 69, 70. During the Vietnam War. Because... I don't know if that war was fake or real, but I can tell you that conscription was real.
Okay.
And the conditions were this. Under law, every male upon reaching the age of 18, and this is still the case, had to register for the draft. It didn't necessarily mean they would be drafted because they might have some kind of, you know, I'm going to take these headphones off because I don't think they're working.
Well, it doesn't bother me as long as your mic won't work. I don't care if you can hear or not. Well, I sort of do. And we got to give Frank a chance too. So just
I'm all ears.
Okay.
Well, we had a military draft and that made everything. It wasn't like you could opt out of thinking about this because the only condition let me give you some history about the military draft. It really started in World War II. I don't know. I think we did have a draft in World War I, but I think and World War II, but where it really kind of hit home was during the Korean War.
Yeah,
because that's, you know, and young men were drafted to go to Korea, and then Dwight Eisenhower was elected on the promise, based on the promise that he would go to Korea and negotiate a settlement, and he did. He was elected in 1952. We had an armistice in Korea, and that war was essentially sort of, it wasn't completely settled, but it was ended at that point. And so young men didn't have to worry about being drafted to go to Korea and get shot at. But the draft was still in effect. And so when a time came for Elvis Presley, they had to make a symbol out of him. And so they had to get Elvis to sell the draft. And even though they would draft, like during World War II, they drafted all kinds of celebrities and movie stars. And some of them, I got to say, were very honorable men and demanded to be placed in combat units. They wanted to fight. But a lot of the Hollywood people, they just did USO tours. And it was understood that Elvis wasn't going anywhere to fight because there wasn't really any active combat going on at the point that Elvis was drafted. Of course, during the Vietnam War, we had a different situation. With the heavyweight champion of the world, had been known as Cassius Clay and changed his name to Muhammad Ali when he converted to the Nation of Islam. And because the Nation of Islam was opposed to the Vietnam War, they said it was a white man's war. And why were young black men being drafted in disproportionate numbers? Because a disproportionate number of young men who were sent to Vietnam were black or Hispanic or white working class, poor people. People who couldn't get out of the draft because they couldn't get a deferment. Now understand what I'm saying here. We're not talking about a draft exemption. If you can prove to the government you're a conscientious objector, you might get an exemption, but even then they'll probably have you working in a military hospital or in some kind of non-combat role. And if you belong to a religious group like Jehovah's Witnesses, you might get a conscientious objector status based on that, but that's not what we're talking about. There were no exemptions for people who didn't apply to be conscientious objectors. There were only deferments,
mm-hmm.
right? Your draft board was who decided among all the people who were registered for the draft, all the men who were registered for the draft, which ones were suitable, which ones were fit to go and fight in Vietnam.
Yeah,
but if you were in college, you got what was called a deferment until you finished college. The argument was made, well, somebody's in the middle of college and you're going to drag them out of college and make them go to Vietnam. The consequence was that a lot of young men who were ready to graduate college, they went to graduate school because for a while, as long as you stayed in college, even if you were going to graduate school, you had that deferment, but then they ended that deferment and they only extended it to graduate divinity schools. So there was a general panic. Well, in 1969, when my final year of high school, there was a real panic among those graduating young men who did not want to go to college. Basically, you had a lot of young men going to college because it was the only way to get out of the military draft. Am I communicating how real this military draft was?
Sure.
Because we don't have it now. They got rid of it after Vietnam for very good reasons. And that's a whole nother discussion. But Elvis had been the poster boy for the draft and he had gone along with it willingly. Muhammad Ali wouldn't do that. Muhammad Ali said, hey, you know, I don't believe in this war. I object to it. I'm against it. And as a consequence, they took away his heavyweight championship. They wouldn't let him fight. They were threatening to jail him. Because remember, during World War I and World War II, people who refused to go in the military, men who refused to go in the military went to prison. And even speaking out against the draft could get you locked up. Eugene Debs was locked up for virtually the entirety of World War I because he opposed that war. So just as Elvis had been the poster boy for obedience and compliance with the military draft, Muhammad Ali became the poster boy for resistance and opposition to that draft. I had a good friend across the street. His name was Avi. He had friends also. They were in my graduating class. And he didn't want to go to college. And the next thing I knew, he and several friends had run off to Canada. I'll get into the significance of Canada in a second, because there's some history here. When John F. Kennedy was president, he kept saying we would not be dragged into a ground war in Asia, that we were only supplying advisors to the corrupt government of the Republic of Vietnam, South Vietnam. And in August of 1964, actually, let me back up a little.
Okay, don't go too far back, because we gotta.
Well, right, because no one gives a fuck about this history. I understand.
No, that. I like history, but we.
No one. You all talk about war like, war's fake. War is fake. Well, the military draft was not fake.
Okay, we're not talking about the draft being fake. We're talking about what they do when they're over there. That's all.
Well, look, some of them were coming back without arms and legs and with their faces blown off and everything else. So,
yeah, you know, that's fine. Yeah,
right. In August of 1964. Lyndon Johnson declared that North Vietnamese gunboats had attacked one of our ships in the Gulf of Tonkin and subsequently went to the Congress. And by November of 65, there were 175,000 troops. And then by 1966, an additional 100,000 troops. The number would surge to 535,000 by the end of Johnson's presidency. And of course, as I said, after Eugene McCarthy humiliated him in the New Hampshire primary, he wasn't going to run again. So, and something happened during this period that really changed my mind, that really kind of moved me around this. And that was an invasion of the Dominican Republic. If I can find this here. Here we go.
Okay.
No, it's down in the forum, but
fakeologistforums.com.
Yeah. Here we go. Here we go. Right here. In 1965, when I would have been, let's see, if I was born in 51, I would have been
20.
What?
14.
I had to go babysit for one of my cousin's toddlers. I used to have to do that. I had to babysit for the relatives all the time. And I went over there. They had the old television set with the rabbit ears. I turned it on. I got over there after school and I turned it on, and it was evening news. And what did I see but this picture? Here's a picture right here of Marines disembarking and landing in the Dominican Republic. The Dominican Republic is half of it's Haiti and half of it's the Dominican Republic. It's called the island of Hispaniola, right there in the Caribbean.
Right, yeah.
And I was kind of stunned by this because the historical background is that LBJ regretted ordering U.S. troops into the Dominican Republic in 1965, as White House tapes confirm. Yet he insisted, "I do the same thing right this second." Why? Because he never wanted to be seen as soft on communism. And the main reason why he sent the Marines into the Dominican Republic was that they had an election. And they had elected a very popular reform left-wing candidate named Juan Bosch. The CIA sponsored a coup by the military in the Dominican Republic. And they tried to overthrow Juan Bosch. But Bosch was so popular that all the people who had voted for him went on strike. And it looked like they were going to return Bosch to power as the legal, democratically elected president of the Dominican Republic. And that's when Lyndon Baines Johnson sent in United States Marines to prop up the military junta there that had overthrown Juan Bosch. And he went into exile. I don't think he went to Cuba. I think he might have gone to Mexico or somewhere, but he went into exile. All this history I've documented in the forum here, right? So when I watched this happening, I said, why are we sending Marines into the Dominican Republic? And then I realized that's what Vietnam was all about. That's what Vietnam was all about. A canceled election.
Okay.
Because when the French were defeated at the Battle of Dien Bien Phu in 1954, the United States stepped in and called the negotiations in Geneva that involve Russia, China, United States, France, the government of the Democratic Republic of Vietnam, North Vietnam, and others, the South Vietnamese also. And what they agreed at Geneva Convention was that the next year, in a year or two, Vietnam was going to have nationwide elections. The whole country of Vietnam is going to have elections. Well, as that date approached, it became clearer and clearer that Ho Chi Minh, the leader in North Vietnam, a communist, so he was called, but also a nationalist, it was pretty clear he was going to soundly defeat the United States' favored candidate, Ngo Dinh Diem, who, by the way, we later had assassinated. But that's a whole other story. So the Vietnam War begins with a canceled election because Dwight David Eisenhower, our president, said, you know something, we can't afford to have a communist elected democratically over a unified Vietnam. And so the Vietnam War begins with a canceled election, just as the invasion of the Dominican Republic happened because we didn't like the guy who got elected. Why am I saying all this? Because at the age of 14, it made it abundantly clear to me that our pretense to stand for democracy against communism in the world was a crock of shit, and that we were liars and hypocrites, and that we didn't give a damn about legal democratic elections or democracy. That's where I'm coming at from all this.
So, and if I may say, there's a view that that's what happened in Australia in 1975. Some people have that view.
With Gough Whitlam.
The US removed the Labor Party. Well, and in particular, one of his ministers, a fellow called Rex O'Connor.
Right. They didn't want to allow, were they objecting to US nuclear subs docking?
There was that, but also there was a strong movement in the Labor Party to get more out of the mineral wealth that was being extracted and continues to be extracted.
Now, Australia, as a part of the CETO, the Southeast Asia Treaty Organization, also provided troops to fight in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And suffered some casualties. By contrast...
And Labor were the people that pulled them out. When Labor was elected in 72, they ended Australian involvement in that war.
Right. They knew it was a loser. Now, I got to say this about Canada and the government of Canada. I guess it would have been under Pierre Trudeau at the time.
What year?
1972.
I'm already back in 69, 68, 69, 70.
Yeah, he was there. Yeah, right. That was him.
He said he opened the arms of Canada and said, well, first of all, the Canadians maintain neutrality. They did not supply, even though they were members of NATO, they did not supply troops for Vietnam, and they were generally opposed to the idea. They thought it was a stupid war. And they essentially extended an invitation to young American men who wanted to evade the draft, the military draft, to come to Canada. And several thousand did. And I have to say, my very warm feelings toward Canadians kind of stems from that period, because we were all very much buoyed by the idea that people like the Swedes, right, the Scandinavians also were very critical of the Vietnam War, and the Canadians opened their arms to us and supported us and helped us. And that kind of that aura of feeling that, here we were beleaguered at the time. If you marched against the Vietnam War, there were always going to be people out there screaming at you, calling you a communist and a traitor, and telling you, if you don't like America, love it or leave it. Love it or leave it. Love it or leave it. That's what they would say. And in the beginning, we were very respectable. We were following priests, actually, the Father Phil and Father Dan Berrigan and Sister Elizabeth McAllister, carrying candles and singing. But over time, things really hardened and got very, very bitter. And this peaked at the Democratic Convention in Chicago in 1968, summer 68, when there was a massive riot. What was called at the time a police riot. And the whole character of the anti-war movement changed from that point. And over the next couple years, it was very interesting to see how a bunch of peace-loving, flower-bearing hippies really evolved and transformed into very angry young people, ready to get out in the street and say, off the pig, off the pig. So with this situation really radicalized us. And it was the draft. Now, they knew the military draft was very unpopular. So when Richard Nixon became elected, he did several things. He proposed to end the... it was clear that the draft deferments for student deferments were a way of discriminating against the poor and the working class. And that it was so unfair and hypocritical because it allowed people with money or the intellectual skills to make it into college and stay in college to evade the draft. Well, to defer the draft. And over time, and Nixon said this is unfair, so he ended it, and he created a lottery. And based on your birthday. And if the lottery number came up, then the guys were drafted. And then they also passed an amendment giving 18-year-olds the right to vote. And the first election in which 18-year-olds could vote in 1972, it's my belief that they voted overwhelmingly for Richard Nixon. Really, that's the only conclusion I can come to. But the whole character of the anti-war movement, it became very, very radical because of the reaction to it. And why am I talking about this?
Lynn, why are you talking about this?
Well, because the military is for morons, and I'm going to prove that right now. Here is Project 1000, Mobilizing Morons for War. This is the background to the origins of the Vietnam War, going all the way back to, as I say, Jack Kennedy and Lyndon Baines Johnson. The Secretary of Defense, Robert McNamara, who was regarded as a genius, he had come in and I think he had saved the Ford Motor Company from going out of business and had modernized their production. And he was considered an expert in something called systems theory that had a solution for everything. And McNamara envisioned the Vietnam War as an opportunity to use the U.S. military draft as a way to socially re-engineer what he called low IQ soldiers. Wikipedia has an article on this. I've posted a YouTube video if people want to get into the details of it. I'll just play the first minute.
In this video, we'll be moving our scope forward in time from the global catastrophe of World War II to the relatively localized plight of the Vietnam War, or what many Vietnamese refer to as the American War. No country is without sin, especially in times of war. Though America's involvement in South Vietnam between 1955 and 1975 remains a topic of controversy, and one particular military recruitment program stains the whole thing with pure folly. That's right, we'll be discussing McNamara's folly, known officially as Project 100,000, in which the United States Department of Defense, spearheaded by Defense Secretary Robert McNamara, sent men that were well below the mental and physical military standards of the time off to fight and die in Vietnam.
So, you can get into the details of that. It's a very good video. In other words, McNamara envisioned the military as a social engineering project for, preparing young men who weren't quite up to college IQ level. So maybe they would come back to America with some skills or something like that. You can read about his motives in the Wikipedia article. It explains the whole rationale for this. And that was their original idea for the military. And in a sense, I really think that the professional military has kind of become that in a way, economically speaking. I was discussing the Gold Star families and the Afghan PSYOP and how all of this is maintained as a kind of brainwashing, gaslighting operation. But it was pretty clear that, and attitudes changed, right? I mean, when Country Joe and the Fish came out with Feel Like I'm Fixing to Die Rag in 67, we were all kind of upbeat. But within 2 years, as the marches, demonstrations, and student strikes exploded on campuses across the country, attitudes hardened. The televised violence of both police and anti-war protesters peaked at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago in the summer of 68. And by 1969, the alienation, the bitterness, the rage, and the defiance of authority was boiling over. And it mushroomed into the ultimate bad trip. That's an expression from LSD. Bad. It just became the ultimate bad trip. And the song that best expresses that was Creedence Clearwater Revival's Fortunate Son, which I'm not, maybe we should play it on the way out. But
we'll play it on the way out.
Yeah, every time I hear that song.
And what does it mean? It just means that if you're born in the right family, you don't have to go to war.
Right.
Right.
I mean, that song and other music that was popular music that was produced during the period, this was the music we marched to. This really expressed how we felt about it. We marched to this music in huge packs right down the middle of the street with or without permits, spoiling for a fight. And this song was powerful messaging. It drove us into the streets by the thousands and in direct confrontation with the cops and ultimately National Guard troops who were deployed in response. And
that so, Lynn, do you think that the, you know, look, with the benefit of hindsight, what do you think people your age should have done at the time? Should they have done what they did, or should they?
I don't know what else we could have done. I really don't, because
so the question here is, you know, in my opinion, the main purpose of our modern world is to get living men and women to break the Ten Commandments, to be shown up to be, as you say, morons, but essentially people that are going to defy God. So I'm going to suggest to you that this whole system really was set up to have people just breaking the commandments in every way. I mean, I think if you're saying nothing better could have been done, that it was all inevitable, one of the possibilities that people could have just not gone, not, you know, just gone to prison, gone, do whatever they had to do to put a fly in the ointment.
And some did. Fathers Philip and Daniel Berrigan, the Catonsville Nine, they went to prison for burning draft records. They poured chicken blood on draft records at the Catonsville, Maryland draft registration office. And thousands of us came out for their trial, and we marched around the courthouse.
But again, I guess I'm suggesting that it's the passive, what do they call it? The peaceful resistance, which seems to be the most effective.
Well, remember, all the good Christians were flag waving patriots.
I'm not arguing with that. It's a perfect example of what I was talking about. And I think I even said that I've said the same thing about what happened after the fall of the buildings were demolished. Is that Americans took, even though they were told that the war was illegal, they went off to war, and they had to sign. It is my understanding is they had to sign a disclaimer about what they were being asked to do. You know, it is a fact that people that went into the Middle East were clearly disobeying international law. It was just told outright.
That was the case for the Vietnam War as well. It was completely illegal, unconstitutional.
So when we look at the legal situation, we know that the law at the time, that the men and women who were asked to go to Vietnam, because it was unconstitutional, because it was against the UN policy, they were actually committing a crime in going.
But that's not how they saw it, obviously. They saw
I agree. It's not how they saw it. But what I'm suggesting to you is the way that this thing was portrayed with all these posters and people going out and protesting was an approach that just clouded up the fact that everything was illegal and that there was no, you know, you can't be made to do an illegal thing. But any court case, if people realize that
that the request to go to Vietnam was illegal because it'd been made illegal under international law, then, you know, there'd been a whole bunch of Nuremberg trials not that long beforehand on that very basis.
I go even further than that. If you go over to September Clues, I have to credit Simon Schack because he names the names. We're always hearing people say, well, who are the they you're talking about, guys? You never talk about the they. Who's doing this? Well, I always mention the names. I always bring up the names. Now, Simon Schack has identified media personalities and videographers like Devin Clark and others who actually produced the lies of 9/11, the video lies of 9/11, the video fakery. And my emphasis is pointing out the generals who, as we sit here now, are 9/11 cowards, 9/11 liars, and filthy, despicable 9/11.
Oh, yeah, you were going to play that audio, Lynn. Let's play that. You called into a show.
Yeah, last week I pinpointed H.R. McMaster and Stanley McChrystal as two of these individuals who get on television, two of these retired generals, because remember, if they're generals now, probably in 9/11 of 2001, they were colonels, captains, majors, lieutenant colonels. And if they specialize in counterterrorism, which all of them claim to do, there's every likelihood that they were participating in the over 40 drills, war game exercises, and military simulations that were taking place on the morning of 9/11. And that's what makes them despicable traitors in my eyes. Because it's one thing to know that treason is being committed and not say anything. That's called misprision of treason. But I'm accusing these people of active treason, capital treason, and they're continuing to commit treason in the same way with the Gaza situation and the Ukraine situation and everything else that's going on in this country. These generals who they trot out on the Sunday afternoon talk shows, which include Flynn, he's in with the Trump camp. McChrystal endorsed Kamala Harris based on her superior character, right? McMaster, who served in the Trump administration, now is kind of not taking a side one way or another. But we've got another one out here named McKenzie, General McKenzie. And he was on C-SPAN, another counterterrorism expert. Let me find him. Wait a minute. Here we go. McKenzie. All right. So I actually called up C-SPAN to confront this guy.
Okay, we're going to listen to Lynn.
Yeah, let me see if I can get this going here. Oh, he went on and on and on.
Waiting anxiously.
All right. Can you hear it?
Nope.
You can't hear it at all, huh?
I can't hear it.
Well,
share the tab. Make sure you got the tab. You got your profile.
Let me do that. Let me share the tab.
The tab has to be shared, otherwise it's not going to go through.
I got it. Here we go. All right, let's see if you can hear it now.
Hold on. Let me just bring it up.
Others, because the fact of the matter is, anywhere in the oil market, there's a perturbation everywhere in the oil market. It's fungible to some degree.
All right, let me fast forward to where China, the action is.
So this is C-SPAN?
Yeah, it's called Washington Journal. I don't expect anybody here to ever watch this show or listen to it. Ever. Even though that's where they, just like, I don't expect anybody to listen to the talking head, you know, Meet the Press, Face the Nation.
Yeah, but you
CNN, State of the Union.
You call into these shows too.
Oh, I used to listen to these shows every Sunday.
Nice.
Every Sunday. I mean, I was really into it years and years ago. I don't now, but every now and then I do. But if you can corner them and actually call them a Washington Journal, which is C-SPAN, that's a good way to see how stupid and messed up in the head most Americans are, especially baby boomers, when you hear how stupid and delusional these people and how inarticulate the people who call in are. But let's jump to my call. I was surprised he even let me in.
Do you always use the same name when you call in?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not, you know.
So they must know you by now.
Oh, yeah. I know they know me because when
I
originally... Is
there a call screener?
Yeah, they do. And I know how they... Then I know they know who I am because when the call screener came on, I said, I'm calling from Columbia, Maryland, which is more well-known. When I came on, he identified me as from Elk Ridge. How did he know that? That's just as he looked at
your phone number.
Yeah, right. So anyway, this is General McKenzie, former commander of CENTCOM. That's Central Command in Qatar. Right? So this guy, he's not just another general. He's deep, deep, deep into what's going on in Gaza. So let's listen to this for a second.
Aspects of the problem, you're very vulnerable. The Iranians actually know that. So
can you hear it?
Yep.
Yes.
An Iranian decision to go forward with a nuclear weapon is not an easy decision.
Oh yeah, they're always bringing up nukes. Oh, these guys.
Yeah, they need the nukes. They need them badly.
Yeah, nukes, terrorism, all terrorism.
It's not as easy a decision as you might think, particularly when they gain so much by dancing with us about the possibility of breakout. But to go back to the question that was asked at the beginning, look, if we've said we're committed to the defense of Israel, I have no reason to believe that we would not do that if Israel were threatened in a way where it looked like they could be overwhelmed.
What was the history of North Korea? Did they do the same thing? Did they flirt with that line before crossing the Rubicon and becoming a nuclear nation? And is there lessons from when that happened?
I think North Korean behavior is so irrational, it's difficult to deduce lessons from, you know, because you're dealing with one guy making all the decisions. They flirted with it, but it was an inexorable process as well. They actually believed very strongly that if they demonstrated they were a nuclear weapon state, they'd be treated as a nuclear weapon state. Well, they haven't been. So that was a failure of North Korean analysis to understand the effects of going nuclear. I think it's hard to draw a lot of conclusions about Iranian behavior based on North Korean behavior. But that's a great question to pose, though, John, actually.
Elk Ridge, Maryland, Lynn, Independent. Good morning. Thanks for waiting.
Yeah. USA CENTCOM happens to be headquartered at Al Udeid Air Force Base in the Emirate of Qatar, which is a nation about the size of a postage stamp. And your immediate next-door neighbors, also headquartered right there in Qatar, happens to be an organization called Hamas, which is also funded by the Emirate of Qatar, which suggests to me that Hamas, like ISIS and Al-Qaeda before it, are basically NATO proxies. That is to say, they are false flag psychological operations being run by NATO.
Well, Lynn got your point. General McKenzie, do you want to respond?
No, I think I'll just let that statement stand by itself. I don't need to say a word.
David, Flemington, New Jersey.
Lynn, way to go. Lynn, getting it in there.
12 out of 10, Lynn.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
This guy, McKenzie, you better believe he was involved on 9/11.
The only problem is I don't think the audience probably has a clue what you're talking about. Our audience does, but theirs doesn't.
Well, when they hear the word false flag psychological operation, you know, you're right. Well,
awesome words. You dropped the bomb. But I think I'm just glad you got it in on the air. Let's put it that way.
Oh, yeah. And you notice how quickly what do you think I was going to follow? The actual question I was going to ask was, I was going to say, General McKenzie, I'd like to know, since you're the counterintelligence specialist, what was your rank and what was your participation in the over 40 drills that went on the morning of 9/11, counterterrorism drills? Which drills did you participate in? Can you talk about it? But you see, they cut me off. So, look, this is important.
Well, at least he held the general to address it, and the general just said, "Nope, not touching that with the 10-foot barge pole." Because there's nothing he could say to get out of that or weasel. He doesn't have talking points. They're not prepared for callers like you that have a good inside track. They really aren't. But they are trained to ignore and just say, "Leave it."
Well, I'm calling out these generals as traitors. because they took an oath. They took an oath.
They're traitors to the country, but
Who did they take an oath to?
To uphold the United States Constitution.
Okay, and that's
all enemies for now. I don't know what Masonic oaths they took that supersede. See, that's what this really comes down to.
Are we talking about the country that's in bankruptcy? The country that's
right. Well, I'm for putting traitors on trial.
Okay, we got a speak pipe that came in. Do you want to listen to that?
Yeah.
I have not listened to it, so I don't know who it is, but let's just see if we can play this. Have a listen.
None of you are going to be in the position to help anyone.
I figured it was him, but let's carry on with Dave J for anyone.
Especially those that you claim to love, your family, unless you get out of the pool first. Stop spreading the false witness of war, death, and mayhem. Do the work, study, show yourself approved, and you will stop being part and parcel to the problem. And then you can start to be helpful for real.
Thank you, Dave J. That's Dave J.
In my opinion, nothing that's been said here today is claiming war and all those sort of things. Nothing here that's been said.
No, we haven't said
other
anything.
Than to say that these events, as Lynn is talking about, took place. As far as I can tell, Lynn has made no false claims.
She has not. And by the way, if you want to talk about secret societies and who runs this world, I want to reiterate that you go to The Hidden Life is Best. It's a podcast series on Francis Bacon, but really he goes all over the place and talks about how Francis Bacon started the Freemasons, and he explains a little bit about how they operate, and how they take over countries. It's actually not the Jews, it's probably these Freemasonic orders, which could include Jews, but it's really, really well done, and I really recommend listening to it. It's linked to the fakeologist.blog. And by the way, my email was not working at fakeologist.com. I'm at fakeologist.com. It wasn't working for 2 weeks, but because I had so many emails that I didn't notice it wasn't working because I had a huge backlog. So I did get it working today. So a couple people, including Lynn, did email me back, but I didn't get it. So now it's working. But I have a backup email. It's ima@fake11.com as well. But the problem is I've cached the site, so the site should technically be faster. If anyone wants to make a comment on that, if it is working faster, please let me know. So you should be able to get a faster version of the website if everything is equal. And so it was messing up my email. So please go to send me an email at ima@fake11.com or ima@fakeologist.com. I still have to set up a few things at the fakeologist.com email, get them back in shape. So, but in the meantime, that's the best way to get a hold of me. I'm also on Gmail. I'm afakeologist@gmail.com. There are a million ways to reach me, but I just thought I'd point that out. Frank or Lynn, did you listen to any of this, The Hidden Life is Best?
No, I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet.
Okay.
It is on my list, though.
Yeah, I've been listening to the material on Francis Bacon. Yeah, Gnosticism and the rise of the British Empire. Yeah,
yeah. Kate Emma, you did listen to one. Okay, good, Kate Emma. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's more about There's a lot of he even interjects some current stuff that's going on today. Yeah, it's very interesting. I think it's just another piece of the puzzle.
Now here's a truth drop from our favorite senator from South Carolina, Lindsey Graham.
Oh, are you going to play a clip?
Yeah, so I'm sharing this. This was a press conference that Netanyahu...
Oh, I know what you're going to play. This guy, I can't stand Lindsey Graham.
Right, well, Richard Blumenthal is even worse. This, you see Benjamin Netanyahu shaking hands with Richard Blumenthal there, the senator from Connecticut. That's a guy that got elected to the Senate from Connecticut, even though he was caught basically running a stolen valor psyop in the sense of claiming that he had been in Vietnam when he hadn't.
Okay.
And this was exposed. It was exposed. And it's so strange. I think, well, this guy's political career must be finished. But no, the people of Connecticut caught this guy lying about his military service and sent him into the United States Senate. That's
but, what the same thing happened to Biden. He's caught lying many times, and he still became president.
I thought you said Kentucky, but it's Connecticut.
Yeah, Richard Blumenthal, Connecticut. Oh, yeah. Sandy Hook country.
All right.
So, you know, that's kind of disturbing enough.
The stolen valor is just par for the course.
Yeah, it's real low life. But listen to what Lindsey Graham says.
I'm going to throw off.
They're going ahead. Go ahead. Oh, it's muted, huh?
Yeah, I don't hear a thing, but just turn the mute off.
This day of commemoration of October 7th, it was the worst attack on the Jewish people since the Holocaust, but unlike the Holocaust, we fight back.
Right. It was the worst attack on the Jewish people since.
Yeah. By the way, that October 7th, if you listen to the Francis Bacon podcast, the number 7 is so important to the Gnostics. It's off the charts. So if you ever wonder why they picked that day.
Well, you know, there's only 365 days in the year. I mean,
the church
used to have a feast. You know, religions assign a particular text or a particular scripture or a particular feast day or mass to every day of the year. So,
you can go overboard with the numbers, but seven's pretty important.
So, listen to what Lindsey Graham what he blurts out.
And we're fighting like lions. With the support of the American government, the American people, and its representatives who are so well represented here. I want to thank you both for your stellar support for Israel throughout the war.
Israel has a right to defend itself.
The reason people were killed on October 7th was they were Jewish. We've seen this movie before. We don't want to see any more of those movies. Living in their own homeland.
Let me play that again. In case you didn't get it.
Movie. Invoking the movie.
I get that. He gets that. You're fighting our fight. Also want to destroy the French people. I get that. You should be doubling down on helping Israel because the people that want to destroy Israel also want to destroy the French people. I get that. He gets that. You're fighting our fight. We're going to help you with your military need. October 7th was they were Jewish. We've seen this movie before. We don't want to see any more of those movies.
We don't want to see any more of those movies. So it's kind of like a reveal, isn't it? It's kind of like a tell.
Oh man, Lindsey Graham is just, you know, the people of South Carolina, get him out of there. I'm like the No Agenda Show.
Yeah,
I was hoping he was telling us there's going to be a ban on Holocaust movies being made in Hollywood.
Oh, I don't think so. Get this guy out of there. Vote him out.
Yeah, in a way, it's a good.
Anybody else in
this urge overkill thing on the part of the Zionists is interesting because by continually saying that, October, it's like January 6th was as bad as 9/11. 9/11 was another Pearl Harbor. October 7th was as bad as the Holocaust. Well, when people look at this, all it's going to do is induce them to take a second. More skeptical look at the Holocaust, at Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't. Right. Yeah, maybe. But the Holocaust is untouchable.
Well, if you know that October 7th is bullshit, but you've never ever looked into the Holocaust, and Netanyahu is saying, "Well, this is the worst attack on the Jewish people since the Holocaust," and you're looking at October 7th, you're seeing paragliders and motorized golf carts and all kinds of stupid fakery.
Yeah.
Coming out of Gaza, you're going to say, well, I wonder if the Holocaust might be fake too. But here's the agenda in Gaza, and this is the bottom line on this stuff. Yeah, sure, Palestinians, Israelis, back and forth. No, the real winners in this are the United Nations, its World Health Organization, UNRWA, the United Nations Relief Works Agency, UNICEF, right? Doctors Without Borders and the Palestinian American Medical Association. And here from Face the Nation last Sunday, I'm going to show you what Gaza is really about and what the real agenda is. We'll play the first minute just to get the drift of it.
Okay, share your screen there.
Can you hear that?
You got to share your screen.
Okay, I thought I did already, but
no, well, you close the screen. When you close it, it stops the sharing. So you got to start all over again.
All right, here we go. All right, you should be able to get it now.
Okay, hold on. Here we go.
US-funded National Defense University. The impact of the war will be felt for generations, which is why we want to take a closer look at children in conflict.
Children,
in
it's Gaza, all about the children.
At least 14,000 kids have died, another 12,500 injured.
Oh my God. All those children.
Catherine Russell is the executive director of UNICEF, the UN agency that helps disadvantaged children around the world.
She looks like a sweet
Good
woman.
Good morning to you.
Oh, yeah.
Good I know you're Lord. Deeply concerned, you've said, by what is happening right now in Lebanon.
Look at that one
Thousands
eye
of
looking
children
at you.
On the streets or in shelters because they've had to flee without supplies.
So let me jump ahead to what her real agenda is.
Do to your ability to help these kids.
Well, I think the speed and intensity is shocking, honestly, and it does make it challenging for us. However, we have been in Lebanon. We're on the ground there. We are doing a lot of work, moving in tons of supplies.
Whoop, sorry about that. Let me go back again.
She's moving in tons of supplies while Israelis blow them up.
Yes, that they are heading down the track to, quote, a man-made disaster again in Gaza. I was told the food deliveries have been continuously declining since May. There are law and order challenges. That's part of the problem. 1 million people.
Right. So on and on and on. Food shortages. But listen to what the real goal is at the end here.
Okay. Give us the punchline, Lynn, and then we're going to have to wrap it up.
All right.
Really suffering every single day.
But you were able to get polio shots in.
Oh, here we go.
You can't get them food.
Yeah, it's such a good question. First, I would say it's terrible that we had to go in and do polio vaccinations, right? There hadn't been polio in Gaza for years, decades, really. And, of course, we started to see some cases of it. That's because they're living in such terrible conditions. The water is dirty and all the rest of it. So we were able, with other UN agencies, to go in and vaccinate children for polio.
Here we go.
Vaccinated well over 500,000 children. 500 million children. It was a real success story. And I think the important point about that is it shows that if the authorities there help us, make it possible for us to do our work, we can do it. We can definitely do it. But we need more support so that there's security. As you say, there is not security right now. It's very dangerous to move things around. The roads are a mess. We get stuck at checkpoints. It's just one logistical problem after another. And I think the polio lesson is we can do it, and they can help us do it if they choose to.
Let's
get the agenda there. You get the agenda. So
yeah, we can get the poison in, but never mind the nutrition, huh? Damn the nutrition.
So who are the winners of this entire Gaza operation? They're the ones saving the poor children of Gaza. This is similar to what Fake Nukes Phil was pointing out about mm-hmm. that kid. Oh, he was saying that there was a baby who, died on the boat lifts, the Mediterranean boat lift. And then they made a big international story out of this, right?
That was back in the day.
Yeah, saving the children. It's all about saving the poor children of Gaza.
Well, that's how you get the money flowing,
right?
Let's be honest.
Right. Yep. And of course, along with the UN, it's World Health Organization, UNRWA, and UNICEF, Doctors Without Borders, the Palestinian American Medical Association, and of course, Global Big Pharma, and the monolithic medical industrial sickness complex. They're major winners in Gaza, no matter how geopolitical polycentric things turn out, right?
Yeah. I'm going to play some AI to wrap up the show, Lynn, if you don't mind.
Okay.
I appreciate your Vietnam lesson. Unless Frank has anything to close the show off with.
No, not at all. I found everything Lynn spoke about today to be very interesting. I'd be more interested in getting some idea from Lynn about how what lessons or what approaches may be available to us to deal with these situations.
That's the most pressing question of strategically. How do we not make?
The way I'm doing it is by writing letters and understanding what the actual legal situation is. For me personally, and if my children get affected, and they want to take a different approach, that I'll be able to give them the help if they want it.
Yeah, and I'm not about to go running out in the streets to demonstrate like we did back then, running with the pack. Although I got to say, it was the experience of a lifetime.
Yeah, I guess I'd think that's what it was about. It was a way of feeling like you had some potency when you did not.
Right, right.
I mean, I was in that time too, and I was we had those kind of protests going on while I was at high school and university, but I was a person who, I must admit, I didn't think they were doing much good, so I didn't take part in them. While I agreed with the sentiment.
We should remind people about the military draft and the military in general. That population are human lab rats and guinea pigs. And the first thing they do when you get drafted or when you enlist is they shoot you up with all kinds of things. And you then become exactly. A human guinea pig and lab rat for whatever they want to test. Yeah. So that's the military.
Yeah.
All right. Well, on that happy note, we're going to play some AI or artificial intelligence, which is all just machine.
So one other thing I just wanted to say.
Okay.
Is that, there seems to be always a remedy for the problems we're in. You know, one of the things I do think happens is that we're presented with a remedy. In the case of the US soldiers, the Canadian government did provide them with a remedy. Interesting. I doubt that the Canadian government would play that role anymore, but it's interesting that the time that people that did not want to go to Vietnam were welcomed into Canada.
Yeah, and by the way, Gerald Ford later issued a pardon to all those Canadian draft resistors, and some of them came back, yep. But a lot of them decided they liked it in Canada, and they decided to stay there and make it.
They like high taxes. Yeah. Yeah, good for them. Yeah, that's true. I'm not sure if it was a big number, but it was a number for sure. We appreciate the donors at fakeologist.com/donate. Appreciate everyone kicking in. We had a couple more. I'll just quickly shout out one or two of them that stepped up. We had a guy named Marcus R., not the Marcus we all used to know. He kicked in $9.80, it looks like here. So thank you so much, Marcus. And Veronica A. Made a donation. LSP, who's on the Fakeologist audio chats. He made a very generous donation last week, so we really appreciate that. And thanks to, who else do we have here? We have Esteban, who is donating on a monthly basis. We really appreciate that. Eugene Yu. And Allison, all donating on a monthly. Epi, we really appreciate all you guys. And this is the end of the week, by the way, for the Fakeologist Show. I know we had an abbreviated week. I was busy. But we will do audio chats on the weekend. What's an audio chat? Well, that's when anyone can step up to the mic and just have a chat with fellow fakeologists. That's at shortfake.com/Discord. Yeah, it's a separate app called the Discord. So everybody has to go over there if you want to join in. It's quite a bit of fun. And we post all that at fakeologist.com/podcast. That's where our audios live. If you want all the links, just go to fakeologist.com. All the links are here. Podcasts, audio chat. And that's a whole very large, very, very involved side of this Fakeologist platform where we chat, and some of the chats go for 5-6 up to 10 hours, even longer. Some of them are rambling, some of them are incoherent, but they are always interesting. And so that's it. And we're gonna play this video. I put it on Fakeologist or fakotube.com, and this is just some really high-end computer-generated imagery where they just, I suppose, transpose a face onto a body. And it's sort of interesting. It's the Door Brothers, but there's all kinds of these things on the Twitter or the X.com. Have you guys seen this at all? Have you seen this kind of...
I haven't, no.
CGI graphic?
Oh, yeah, I really like it. It's pretty good.
Yeah, Kate, I mean, you don't need a mobile phone. You can do it on your desktop. You don't need a phone. should be able to get around if they require a phone to authorize. So you can do it on your computer. All right, Lynn, thanks for the history lesson as usual. We'll try and be back on schedule next week. And Frank, thanks for stopping by.
My pleasure.
And thanks everyone for joining. We go about an hour, so we're done at the hour mark, and we'll see you next week, hopefully. So here we go with some computer-generated imagery. And the only thing that really is something to think about is as this computer-generated imagery gets better and better, they're going to need some way to verify fake video. So that's all going to be kind of funny with the with fakeologists in mind, where, oh, we're going to have to verify or authorize what's real or fact check video. I see that coming very shortly. So let's have a look and see what's going on. I'll take the chat off the screen so you can all see and wish everyone a good one. And I guess we should line up CCR at the end, shouldn't we, Lynn? CCR, Fortunate Son.
If you have time, I think it's a great song. And every time I hear it,
I love it.
It just makes the blood rush to my head because I remember marching in the streets to that music. Boy, it really moved us.
Yeah, we'll play that out. That's really...
Any relationship between your movement and the Tavistock Institute, do you think, Lynn?
Well, I'm sure they probably were trying to infiltrate, mostly through the music and the drugs and the counterculture. Yeah. And maybe the politics too. No, I have no doubt Tavistock was present there, you know, in the person of, you know, people like Timothy Leary and Richard. I mean, sure, you could get into a whole analysis of the counterculture. We were manipulated. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt.
Infiltrated, yeah, for sure. Okay, guys, thanks for joining, and here we go with the video. Thanks, everybody. That was kind of cool. And we'll see you next show.